All right, and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Snack Time. Mike and Ant. I'm one of your co-hosts, Ant Testator, a writer of names and flavor text for Wizards of the Coast and articles at Gathering Magic. And with me today, as always, is the very flavorful and rude Mike Linneman. But also with us today, we have a very special Snack Time guest, Mr. Dave Lee.
How's it going, guys?
Pretty good.
It's going super well. For those of you who don't know Dave Lee, it's kind of a common name. Could be any Asian guy, really. Dave Lee is otherwise known as the superhero name, also on the internet as Durfington.
Yes, my alter ego, there are millions of us, but Durfington, there's only one.
Okay, so as long as we're kicking that off, you know, introduction of a known community member, where did Durfington come from?
So it probably came from when I was more of a like a huge online gamer type person. And when I started out, like most like 12, 13 year olds, you try and think of a really cool name. So like my original name was like Black Razor. Like, what's cooler than Razor? Nothing.
Nailed it.
And then enter that phase where you kind of pick a silly name because you don't want people to take you seriously, so you just crush them and you don't expect it. So I picked Durf because kind of a silly, derpy name. So sometimes I'll still use that name, but I'll just go around like playing like, you know, Quake or Half-Life or whatever, calling myself Durf. And then I realized more and more people started taking that name, so it wasn't as available as it used to be. Sure. And then I decided to put a bit of a royale spin on Durf, and then started calling myself Durfington Esquire. And then that's just how it started. Like when I started doing the magic art, I started like, you know, this is Dave Lee, I draw this stuff, and then I just started using the name more and more, and then kind of took on a life of its own.
And now barely anyone actually knows your real name. I like that. All right, go.
Speaking of goofy gamer tags, real quick, Mike, do you have one? I don't even know if I've ever asked you if you're like into online gaming or not.
I rarely, but I do have a tag. I mean, when I'm not using Vorthos Mike, because people can't pronounce my last name. There's a lot of N's. They can never spell it right. I used to just use, you know, MJ in my last name, but it's too long. It's complicated. So my name on, like, originally on Magic Online Traders Leagues is Fiber was my main. Hard to Swallow, I thought, was always a funny thing. It's like a 13-year-old, right? And problem is, it's always taken because, you know, this is a common thing. So I picked 13 after it because whenever there's a choice to pick a number, I would just always pick 13. And if you know your Burton snowboards, the 13 always looks like a B. So it would be Fiber. And if you've ever been around me for longer than a day or two, I tend to use B's and P's a lot. Oh, we're going to Warp. What are you guys doing? Or just adding B's and things. So it became this, like, comical joke to myself that I laugh like milk dub instead of milk dud. So I'm usually the Fiber 13 or Fiber B, and then Vorthos Mike for those other cases.
Nice.
And what were you?
What was I?
Yeah.
So I mean, right now, like when the one that I use is Aenti, which is Aenti, and phonetically it spells Ant, which is ant. So it's like I'm trying to be clever, but I'm not.
That's cute.
I used to play on my brother's accounts mostly, and his name was Scoopy Loops.
Nice.
For the same reason of just like when you get killed by someone named Scoopy Loops, like it just makes you feel that much worse about it. So
it really does. So Snack Time episode this week, we need to start with the flavor gems. And I'm going to kick this off because, as we know, Durf does a dirtling around his webcomic. So what am I going to take for my flavor gen? I'm going to take the most dirtly of dirtles, the dirtle turtle himself, Meandering Tortoise Tower Shell. Because not only is it super dirtle, 5/8, 5 drop, fine, no flavor text, but it's all dirtle. It's literally a giant friggin' turtle city on the back, and this creature has a future version that it becomes, you know, a zombie in the future. because of, you know, the cons of Tarkir, the storyline changes. But I still like the original. I think the zombie one isn't done as well. I just like the solid green color palette and, you know, the sense of scale really easily done as you see the larger art. And I mean, and the card, every time I see it played in EDH, it just makes me laugh because I'm just like, ah, Dirtle Turtle! So, yeah, going with it.
Nice. I took Twisted Image, kind of continuing our theme for Durfington being our guest here. One of the things that you do is you create these kind of like derfed versions of people in the community. So Twisted Image as the name, it's kind of like a twisted image of those community members.
I can dig that. All right, Durf, what do you got for us?
Okay, so I started playing Magic way back in, you know, revised Fallen Empires. That's kind of a, I don't know, it signifies my age. So I was talking with Kerry Dan on Twitter, Kyle Mathers, who edits the A-Team podcast, and he was talking about his cube, and it reminded me of one of these older cards I totally forgot, which was Acacian Javelineers, which came out in Fallen Empires. So it's white for a 1/1, and when it comes into play, it gets a counter, and you tap it to remove a counter and ping something for 1. So I think that's pretty cool, because there are a few cards that have that kind of theme where you have, like, ammunition, or you have a spear and you throw it. So, like, in Homelands, he had Serrated Arrows, and then in Weatherlight, they had Serrated Biscellion, where he just kind of, like, takes spikes out of his back and throws them at people, even though he has no arms. That's still cool. But I thought that, like, not only, like, a pretty cool card, like, as a one-drop, just to take out the other guy's one-drop, but there's this almost, like, helpless feeling about him, because, like, he throws his one spear, and there's not really any way for him to reload, so he just kind of sits there. And I just thought that was kind of funny, in a weird, helpless kind of way.
He just dirtles after he does his one thing. Like, yeah, exactly, like an enter the battlefield effect, and then worthless. Like, worthless 1-1, like, POS, basically. And no, his job is to kill, like, a Birds of Paradise, and that's it.
All right, I got to stop you right there. We got to hang up and dial back in, because at the end, Dave, your mic was getting kind of crazy.
What's that? What is it sounding like?
It sounds like all...
Okay, I might need to restart my computer too.
All right, let us know when you're ready, and then I'll bring you back in.
Okay.
Hold on to your butts.
Hello, hello, hello.
What?
Yay!
I fixed it, kind of.
Okay, perfect. So,
all right,
we'll take a couple seconds into it, and then we'll go right into like the normal part.
Sounds good.
Yep. All right, so Mike, I gotta know with this. Acacian Javelineers, what are they wearing?
Okay, I mean, those hats are just fire. Look at that ish. It's like
literal fire.
I mean,
we got to get somebody in the community to make those so that we can all wear them to a GP.
Cosplay.
I would totally cosplay these dudes.
It's just dudes wearing skirts and freaking octopus hats. Like, how badass is that with a javelin?
With a dagger and a javelin?
Like, you show up to an event, they're like, what the hell are you, like, freshman?
No, but then... Dude, three of us, like, we could pose and have the one guy do the pose and the other two be in the background just derping it up.
Oh, my God.
I do like the one guy who came prepared with a knife because he did know he was going to run out of spears. The other two guys
You're
like,
right.
I don't know.
Yeah, the other two are like, look at that guy with a knife. What a noob. Look at the noob with a knife.
Just an idiot. I think it's so funny to me that this was probably just like, make some guys with javelins, and Scott's like, "All right, well, they're getting some weird ass hats then, fucking whatever."
Right?
Oh my God!
Or maybe there was like a Fallen Empire style guide where they were like, "Okay, the Acacians usually dress pretty normal, but they're javelin squads. Oh baby, they make hats out of octopuses."
They're not a party.
Just they have the weirdest ish all the time. Oh my God, that's fantastic. So Durf, you're going to have to give us a spiel about all of these things that people may have like encountered into you. But the most important thing that, you know, is milestone year, your web comic. What year is this that you've been working on this freaking thing?
So this year, 2016, is the 5th anniversary of Dirtling Around being actually in existence. So I'm still going strong with, like, doing all the comics and the art, and it's so, like, I look back thinking, like, 2011 was 5 years ago, 2011 was like Scars of Mirrodin block, and I just think back as like, that's a long ass time ago.
Right?
Yeah. What, your first, the first comic was what? It was just like two Mir having a slap fight?
Yeah, it was like a single panel, because I didn't really want to do like the, like a horizontal oriented comic. I wanted to do like, you know, more of like squarish painting type illustrations. And so it was just one panel and just had like a few like caption bubbles saying, you know, like under the, like the twin suns, like the, or the sons of Mirrodin, the fate of Mirrodin is decided, like dot dot dot, by slap fight. And you have these two mirror, like one black mirror, one white mirror, and they're just kind of flailing at each other, like kind of whimpering as they're doing so. So I thought that was kind of cool.
So how did that come to be? Like, what was the genesis of this? Is it, you were just sitting here like, dude, I need to make an effort webcomic. I need to get this. Like, well, where did this come from?
So for the full origin story, you kind of have to go back to the previous year, which is 2010. And I had just kind of gotten back into magic around that time. And, you know, I was drawing kind of my own thing, but I kind of wanted to do, like, some more magic fan art. So I started doing a bit of that. And around that time, I was starting to use Twitter as well. I found it was a pretty cool way to talk to people who are also interested in magic that wasn't on, like, you know, like MTG Salvation and other magic forums, a different kind of way to talk to people. And so I got to know KYT of manaprived.com that way. That's how we met, actually, was on Twitter. And he is always saying, you know, draw me something, because I was posting some of my earliest stuff on Twitter. And then my first GP that I went to was GP Toronto, and there was like, that was, I think, was in the fall of 2010. So I met him there. I met Scotty Mack there, and in like, to kind of like almost like a preparation for meeting them, I drew the four cast members of the A-Team, the first four original cast members, in like, you know, this black and white like pen sketch, and then I showed it to them at the GP, and they were just like, "Whoa, that's crazy! I've never seen that before." And so KYT later contacted me towards the end of the year and said, I want you to work on a comic for my website. And at the time, I was kind of writing EDH articles for a couple other sites. And he's like, no, you got the work for my site. Like, I need you to do a comic for me. And so we kind of chatted a bit, and the kind of the rest is history. I started putting comics on manprive.com, and I'm still doing that today,
as we can see. So how did this style come to be? Because, I mean, even early on, I mean, back in 2011, if you go right back into it, you start to see some characters that you return to often. I mean, I think anything during the Innistrad block, you painted Avacyn quite a bit.
Yeah.
Is there, like, anything that you gravitate to in that way, shape, or form?
So the funny thing is that kind of dirtling style of, you know, like big eyes, stubby fingers, like that was created by itself. Like, I'd never really had that style when I started. And, like, even looking, like, aside, like, I look back at art I did, like, a year ago, like, comics I did a year ago, and I think it looks like trash. I don't know. And even looking back to, like, 2011, it's like, oh my god, why did I ever put that shit up there? But, like, because, like, it's like that awkward, like, adolescent, teenage phase. You're trying to figure out, like, what you're trying to go for. And when I started doing the comic, I didn't really have an idea of like what kind of humor I wanted to do or what kind of style I wanted to do. But yeah, like after like maybe like, you know, 4 or 5 months, I started doing more of these like caricatures, like, you know, these cartoony, like almost like childlike caricatures of all these planeswalkers and other characters. And like people seem to like that because like it's almost like taking a certain aspect of a character's personality and pushing it to the extreme. Let's say, like, there was one popular early one was when, during Scars, like, Elspeth and Koth were playing with their own, like toys, right? Like, Elspeth had her soldiers, Koth had, like, his mountains, and then they're making fun of Tezzeret in the corner, like, oh, he's playing with the stupid cups, and then the last panel, you have, like, Koth running away from a giant 5-5 cup, and people love that one. And so I just kept doing that, and, like, over time, like, over months and months, I just kind of refined like these little planeswalkers, and then every time a new planeswalker comes out, it gets me excited. It's like, oh man, I get to, like, you know, find my own rendition or interpretation of that planeswalker.
It's almost like you get like a new character, because normally webcomics have the same people, and, you know, you see them over and over again. But really, every couple months, you're like, ooh, I get someone new.
Yeah, and that's why I like it's still fun to draw these comics, because it's not just the same cast of four people. Because if it was, and if I had to do it those same characters all the time, I'd probably run out of ideas a lot faster, but like these are almost like vignettes where like every week or every 2 weeks I get to revisit like something I like to do or something that people haven't really seen before.
So or something commenting on it in the community or something of that. So
yeah, those are the community comment ones are probably my favorite ones of yours. Like I think my absolute favorite one as far as just like the joke is concerned was it's actually a really old one, I believe, where you're just talking about like different control finishers.
Yes.
And you show like Sarah Angel and then a clone and then I think it's a Psychotog. I forget what the third one is. Is it Psychotog? Yeah, and then the fourth one is like a Squadron Hawk carrying like a big sword. And it's like what has happened?
Yeah. Like I appreciate that. And like I never really wanted to draw scenes of like people sitting around a table playing cards because I didn't think that was like that's not something I would really enjoy drawing for like weeks on end. And so I kind of like the more fantastical aspect of Magic. So I don't really talk about like the players directly or anything like that. I want to focus more on like the characters, the settings, and in the multiverse because I think that's cooler to draw and like gives me a little more freedom to explore like art wise and yeah, I just think that's more fun for me personally, so that's what I do.
Okay, so in doing this, if someone was going to do a webcomic, I mean, generally people do a couple of them. They disappear for a while. You might have heard of the comic Vorthosian Inquisition.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really, really rare when there's something new. How do you keep this up? Like, even writing myself, like, writing weekly is so difficult. Like, people really don't understand that. Like Mark Rosewater's biggest feat is literally writing every week.
Seriously, yeah.
Like how do you stay motivated to just constantly be just cranking out just something that people really like seeing each and every week?
I mean, like I've had like my fair share of times where I step back and think like I don't know if I have any more ideas for this comic or I don't know if I have the time because over the course of 5 years like your priorities in life shift like here and there and things are always changing. And so like maybe for the first like few years I did them every week without fail and it was like and because like I have a very arduous way of doing comics, like I put way more time into them than I probably should. I should probably like figure out a way to make my process better. But like it usually takes like a couple evenings to do a comic, and so to do that every week was it took a bit of a toll on me. So I talked to KOT and said, like, how do you feel if I did them like every other week? But like they will come out every other week and they'll be good because it'll be something that I enjoy doing, so I'll do it. And so I did that like maybe a couple of years ago. I kind of changed my schedule so they didn't come out every week, but they there's a bit more space in between each one. But every time one comes out, it's something that I'm really amped to do because I'm kind of banking ideas almost.
Right.
And
right.
So that's one way of preserving ideas.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that because Mike and I literally started doing a very similar thing because we were just getting burnt out like writing an article every week, and we found that every other week was like we would like what we joke back and forth called a punt article.
Yeah.
Where it wasn't really something that we were super passionate about writing about necessarily. But it was good enough that it could have been an article. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up doing, settling on, hey, why don't we just do articles every other week and alternate who's on what week so that way we can kind of ensure that, we're really excited about whatever that article is. And then, like, when you're excited about it, it shows. Like, it definitely just adds a little bit to whatever kind of creative thing that you're working on.
Right, right. All right, well, let's switching gears real quick on this.
I have one really fast question.
Okay, we'll shoot you.
How did you get into like the whole process of derfing community members? Because I get like the magic stuff and I get the planeswalkers, but like where did that come from?
I think it probably started when I can't pinpoint an exact date, but I did know like, the A-Team guys wanted to have like their own individual avatars because I had drawn them. Those were the first people I had drawn in the community, and so they wanted them for Twitter, so I did that. And then I might have a couple other podcast people might have come to me and asked me to do them, so I did those as well. And then maybe once in a while I hold like a little contest, and then the winner would get derfed, I don't know, that there's some kind of connotation behind it. Anyways, so I did that, and then just more and more people started asking to do like to get derfed, and then I kept doing it, and then out of nowhere, it just became this thing where like I would draw people in the community, and they love the shit out of it. So like, why wouldn't I keep doing this? And yeah, it came snowballed into like this phenomenon in itself.
So what number are you at right now?
Holy crap, I don't even remember the number. I know I have a gallery on my website, so I'd have to count, but if I were to ballpark it, maybe 40, 50-ish? That would be a number I'd guess.
It's a lot.
Wow.
It's a lot of people.
That is a lot.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't, like, I can't even remember all of these people. I have to look back into the actual gallery and be like, oh, I remember that time that, I remember this person, I remember that person. So it's a lot of people. It's a lot of people.
So okay, is this kind of becoming like a thing that you're associated with about this heavy meta community? Because it seemingly most of the people that are in that world have a derf. They've been derfed. They have a depiction of them being derfed. Do you think there's any reason to that, or any sort of reinforcement that someone when they elevate to being known enough that, oh yeah, well, you got to talk to Durf now, almost it's like a rite of passage.
Well, it's funny because I had listened to the first episode of Heavy Meta before it was released. I was one of the people who they kind of piloted with, and like I didn't know any of these guys at the time, and I listened to the first episode and I'm like, what the hell is going on in this podcast? Right. But I thought it was hilarious, and so yeah, I was a big fan of those guys from the very start. And then, you know, they had me on in one of their early episodes. And then in Vegas, the first Vegas Grand Prix in 2013, I met them for the first time, Maddie and Kevy, and then met a whole bunch of people from the SVU. And then that was kind of the point where I realized, wow, this is like an actual community. That's when it kind of hit me, when like there are all these people in this house and they're partying and cubing and drinking and having fun. And then that's when I realized this is actually kind of a thing. And, you know, like a lot of the people who were in that house, like either like I derfed them before or they had asked me and ended up cornering me in real life and asking like, hey, where's my avatar? Where's my derf? Yeah. I was like, oh man, I did not anticipate this. But that's like, it's super cool because like when I'd always done art on the side as kind of like a hobby, and when I posted up, like, it didn't really get a whole ton of traffic, so I just kind of did it for my own amusement, you know. But like realizing that they're like, there's like this community out there that wants to see more of this art. It's like, in the like recent being the past 5 years, it's been like pretty recent thing for me to have that kind of exposure. So like, I'm totally happy and totally like grateful for like everyone who's ever looked at my art or read my comics or anything. It's just, I think it's pretty cool.
I think it's like it's a proving ground. It's this known thing where someone's like, oh, this is a big community member, and then I ask them, oh, have they been derfed?
Yeah.
And if they don't know what I'm talking about, I'm like, oh, you must be British or Australian. But even the Aussies know. I mean, those weird dogs down there living upside down know as well. I mean, clearly they do. If someone wanted to get on this list, because, you know, I'm on there, you know, I feel very, very, very indebted to you. I still owe you for this. And how could someone get on, you know, the queue? How could, say, I don't know, my co-host, say Antoine.
Man.
Like, how does that happen? Someone, do they just need to be like, you know, can I be derfed? And you're like, bah, you ain't shit yet. I'm not doing it. or do they have to, like, you know, give you a peace offering? like, give you, like, Canadian gifts of, like, maple syrup and ketchup chips and poutine? Like, what's the process?
Like, there isn't really, I don't think there really is a kind of a process. Like, I mean, like, if you wanted to think of it as a pure transaction, I am not, you know, 100% altruistic. I can be bribed with questing Feldegriffs because I collect many of those. But I mean, like, it's just, if you talk to me on Twitter and we have conversations and I like you and I don't think you're a terrible person, there's a very good chance you'll get nerfed, because...
Okay, so, okay, hold up. Questing Feligriff.
Oh, did I just skim over that? I think I just skimmed over that.
skimmed over this. Okay, okay. So for people that don't know, Durf likes this freaking hippo.
Purple hippo.
Yes. Flying purple hippo. I don't know why. I never really got a reason why you like hippo.
It's a purple hippo that has wings, Mike.
I mean, it's badass. No question there. And I'm not against hoarding things. I mean, I collect giant spiders and power sinks, and I have hundreds of them. But it's not a purple hippo. So what's up with the hippo, Durf?
So the last time I played Magic before I quit and restarted was around Invasion Block. And Plane Shift came out, and with it came Questing Feldegriff. And so what I decided to do was to make a casual deck based on Questing Feldegriff. And it was a block-constructed deck. So back in the day, you had, like, I think Sunscape Familiar. It's like a 2-mana white wall that makes, you know, blue and green spells cheaper. So I had a bunch of those. Mm-hmm. I had Questing Feldegriff. It was a Bant deck, though obviously it wasn't called a Bant deck at the time. Mm-hmm. And it had Dueling Grounds. And if you look at Questing Feldegriff, its green ability is to pump it in exchange for giving your opponent 1/1 hippos. But if you play Dueling Grounds, where only one creature can attack and block each turn, right, you just pump Questing Feldegriff as much as you want, because you don't care how many hippos they have, as long as you can give your Questing Feldegriff flying and make it a 10-10 and kill them in 2 turns. So that was my casual deck, and I realized I started having more of these lying around because they're kind of like bulk rares, and no one wanted them, so I just took them. And when I sold my collection, I kind of kept those Questing Feldegriffs, and when I started playing Magic again, I started kind of slowly adding onto that collection. And
the obsession.
So I think of it as like recruiting more hippos into my air force. Because, you know, there are a bunch of them out there. They're kind of operating on their own. They should probably, like, you know, come back to the mother base. And so I'm recalling as many hippos as I can find.
Nice.
Hey, Ant, can we yell at Ethan? Can we yell at Ethan to be like, dude, I know you have a list of tokens you want to get made. Where are my 1/1 green hippos?
Where are my 1/1? Hippos.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Because there are no official hippos.
I know that Mel Lee, she makes she 3D prints little hippo tokens.
Oh, I think
something.
I might have seen those a while back.
Durf needs some hippos.
Yeah, yeah, I'll have to hit her up and see if she can send some your
Durf,
way because she made a whole bunch of them.
We're gonna make that happen.
That would be stellar.
We need to get you some We need to get you some hippos. Like, real talk.
Didn't an artist make a hippo token? I feel like they did.
Yeah, it was Mike Lim Darkin. He made one for.
Oh yeah, that's
event.
Right.
But that's not an original.
Yeah, it's not a. It's not.
It's not a real G.
It's not 3D.
It's not 3D, and it's also. And you know, it's not purple.
In all honesty, I should be collecting all of these things.
You just
have a little altar, a shrine. My place.
Oh my God.
What about the OG? What about the OG hippogriff? Or Feldegriff?
I've got a couple dozen of those. They're like secondary, but...
Not as cool.
I don't have as fond memories of the original Feldegriff.
It's a fair point.
The nostalgia.
Exactly, yeah.
That's a fair point. Also, and I know the person who has this... The hippo. I know the person who has the art to this. They won't sell it, unfortunately.
Understandably.
Yeah, right, because it's awesome. Like, what the hell? Like, you put this in a kid's room, and then you're like, I don't really want it in a kid's room. I want it in my office. Cause
who did that one? Is it Kavada?
Yeah, it's Kavada. And Kavada's now sold out. He sold all his original paintings, unfortunately. But, you know, but we're trying. We're trying to get Durf one day to get him some aspect of this hippo that he could, like, put on, like, look, like, when he hits, like, 100 people that are Durfed. Or, like... 200 or something, and he'll be like, "Blop!" The hippo goes on the wall, you know.
That would be sweet, but I mean, like, I would just settle for like 5 minutes of Matt Cavada's time, and just like a giant stack of Questing Feldegriffs in a pen.
Yeah.
That would be enough.
Just like, you tell me everything about this effing hippo. Like, what the hell, man? And he's like, "Dude, I don't know. I had a bunch of herb," and they're like, "Dude, we need a hippo." And he's like, "Well, this hippo's gonna be flying, just doing it live." And for the viewers that don't know, Durf is also beyond just a Vorthos, because a lot of Vorthoses are known as, you know, being quite terrible Magic players that they make dirtily elf decks that just suck, but Durf's actually one of the players that I can actually very, very good at the game. And this really made real at the Vintage Artist Constructed tournament that we had last year at Grand Prix Vegas. So the Vintage Artist Constructed, you make a deck out of one artist's cards, including basic lands. So someone like, oh, I really want to be, you play Alexei Brooklot's deck. That's great. But he
Kev Walker.
He has another basic land. So you can't
play. Kev Walker.
You know?
That's what my deck would be.
I mean, it'd be super fun to do it. And so this has become like a Vorthos really insider club of people that play this weird format. And Durf, what who did you play?
So I played a Greg Staples Boros deck, which was kind of like mid-rangey. I'd call it mid-range, but it kind of played the long game well too, and if you had like a nut draw, you could curve out pretty well on your opponent. So kind of like the marquee card was Baneslayer Angel, because like Baneslayer is just stupidly good card, and I love it to bits. So it's once you get to that point, you start landing Baneslayers and taking out the other guy's creatures. It just snowballs really quickly. And what I liked about it also is that it's versatile. Like, it had a lot of good removal. You could take out artifacts, enchantments. You can burn guys out. You can exile them. There's so many different things you could do. And it just felt like a really solid deck. And I don't think I would pick another deck to play unless I had, you know, hundreds of dollars. And like Ant said, build a Kev Walker deck, because that would be my dream deck would be a Kev Walker deck.
Because Kev Walker obviously has done
all the best cards.
He's done more cards than anyone. He literally has, he can make a cube with just his cards.
And he's done like 10 white sweepers. He just needs some
you could, yeah, you could have 4 Wrath of Gods, 4 Damnations.
It's just absurd how much stuff he has.
Yeah. Or like Wayne Reynolds would be another good one, because he has all the best spot removal. Like, you could get Dreadbore. And
I know, that's what I, and Terminate. That's why I play Terminate. In my version, I play Wayne Reynolds, because of how much removal he has. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, especially for Planeswalkers.
Yeah, because that's
and you get the best of Johnny too, right? Vengeant.
It's hard to get the white out.
Yeah, because I think it's only the tap land that gives you the white, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
So while very cool to do it, it's really hard to get that thing out on turn 4. I mean, near impossible to get that out on turn 4, and that's why I should play it in that deck, but we don't.
That's one of the things I noticed about Vintage Artist Constructed is that, because there are all these deck-building barriers and restrictions, on the one hand, it breeds a lot of creativity about finding ways around these limitations. It's also that some people, like, a lot of deck ideas that I tried to put together, I just foresaw them just falling flat on their faces because, you know, you don't have enough 2-drops, or you can't get, you know, double green by turn 3 when you really need it. And right. So that's kind of one of my, you know, benchmarks of a deck that I would play is based on, like, can this deck consistently play the cards it wants to play in the first 4 turns of the game? Because there are a lot of decks that look cool, can do really awesome things, but they can't, you know, fend off the opponent to live long enough to pull off those things.
Right. And so many people are like, I want to play this artist, it'd be so sweet. And it's like, they haven't gotten any basic lands. Like,
yeah.
And that super sucks. Anyone who's done any Planeswalkers, because in the game, if you drop a Planeswalker, you just, it's like playing Cube. You just stomp people.
Oh, yeah. It's like, imagine playing, you know, like, Mirage or Alliance's Era Magic, and then one person just gets to play Planeswalkers. How do you kill them? You have no ways to kill them aside from burn, really.
Yeah, totally. Like, you just get stomped from it. Right. Okay, so this is a thing that we're going to be doing at Grand Prix Minneapolis, i.e. my city, Memorial Day weekend, this May. We're going to be doing a Vintage Artist Constructed tournament. It was our... Instead of the one sketch that Durf, you won of the wonderful dragon, we're going to be having 2 sketches. The winner will get one, and the second one we're still trying to figure out what we're going to do with. But that'll be part of it. It's not going to. It could be part of the official GP as like a side fun event, or we could just do it off-site, probably where this heavy meta folks get together and cube, and we might just have it there instead. Like, you know, some people cube at this time, and we'll have a little tournament there. We just need like a level 1.
That sounds.
As we're rolling through this, Dave, you're from Toronto, right?
Toronto. Kind of roll. It's a T and the R kind of roll.
Kind of does. It kind of does. So since I'm a Minnesotan, I understand what you Nucks are up to. But
snow,
obviously. Can you explain the scene there at all? For anybody that, you know, I talk about Minneapolis with Mead Hall and Meadery quite a bit, but I don't really know anything about the Toronto scene.
In terms of Magic, it's pretty vibrant. You know, like, face-to-face games started the Toronto store maybe, I don't know, a couple years ago, I'd like to say, and it's like, it's a real, like, it's an awesome store, and it's like, it's where a lot of people go. It's like, kind of like one of the big hubs where you go on, like, you know, for FNM or other tournaments. And because Toronto is a big city, because for some reason, a dozen years ago, they decided to merge, like, seven smaller cities. So there's, like, North Toronto, there's downtown, there's East End, West End. And for the most part, in, like, the downtown area, even in North Toronto where I live, there are stores where you can play Magic. And so, like, there's no lack of players to play against. And what's really cool also is that maybe up until a few years ago, I was really big into Legacy. And it's, like, it's sometimes hard to find people to play Legacy with in your city. But in Toronto, there's no problem with that. There's a big Legacy scene, which I think is awesome. But the same thing can be said for, you know, Standard, Modern, Limited, anything you want to play, there are people you can play with, just because Toronto's such a big place and it's easy to connect, and there are a whole bunch of stores. So, like, anytime you, in most parts of the city, anytime you want to play FNM, there is a place for you.
So, well, what about that flavor scene, though? Like, that you know, that's what I'm curious about. Do you guys ever invite artists into things? Or, I don't know. There's a pre-release, and all of a sudden someone gets contacted in to bring into town.
I know people did that way back when they still ran regional pre-releases, kind of like those bigger events. Sure. So I remember, I think the very last one, I was so pissed I couldn't go because Raymond Swanland was one of the people who went, and then a friend of mine got cards signed for me, which is really awesome. But I don't think we've ever brought in artists since then. For other than, you know, the Grand Prix. So, no, I don't think we have.
Isn't Seb up there?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Seb McKinnon is up your way.
I think I met Seb at Grand Prix Montreal, but other than, like, you know, the Grand Prix is where they bring in the artists, for, you know, I don't think there have been events that have been big enough for them to bring out artists to. But, right. Yeah, because ever since they changed the PTQ system, right? So, right. Like, they've been dropping down to, like, you know, 100, maybe 200 people, whereas before, PTQs would balloon up to, you know, like 300, 400 people, which is like a ridiculous number. And that was probably the time that I would think that they would bring in artists for that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, for some of the local FNMs, I mean, it'd be really great if that could coordinate that. And we'll have to talk offline to get some contacts in there, because I know that if artists could sneak over to a pre-release or a release, maybe on a Saturday, and, like, hang out for 3-4 hours, and they're like, okay, well, you're going to be coming to face-to-face. DERF, noted community member, sent me an email, you know, legitimized, you know, that said, no, come to this store, it'll be fine, you know, this is who I am, this is what I do. Love for you to come. That, you know, you can almost build a community of flavorful people of being like, oh, yeah, that's right, we're in a city, and there's all these other different choices, but, you know, I'd like to come to this place because, you know, they sometimes bring in artists.
I think that would be pretty cool.
Or bring in DERF to hang out, or an altarist, or whatever.
Yeah, because, like,
that'd be sweet.
For, like, especially, like, on a, like, you know, Saturday morning pre-release, 10 a.m., you got a whole bunch of people amped to play, and then, like, you know, we got a surprise announcement. We have, you know, this guy who did these cards here. So in between rounds, you know, chat them up, you know, buy some prints, get some cards signed. I think that'd be pretty awesome.
I mean, you don't need many of them. But if you had, like, one artist just come in for, like, 3 hours, have them buy lunch, give them a table, say, you know, well, you can sign, maybe have a fee to sign cards or not. I don't really care. I mean, I think some of you guys in these bigger cities that really have good community members that we can reach out to, that, you know, maybe we can touch base with you, DERF, and say, hey, this guy lives near you. Can you get your local store owners to know that?
Yeah, like, I know Kelly from Face to Face pretty well, and, like, I think he would be he's a big ideas guy. He loves, like, you know, pushing the boundaries of what you can do in events, and I think he'd be totally on board with something like that.
I think that sounds fantastic. We'll have to start doing that and start testing it with different cities, because in Minneapolis, in Minnesota, we don't have anyone. Winona Nelson was from Minnesota, but she moved. And the other people locally have all moved. A lot of them moved to California. I mean, so we're in a drought, a desert for artists, so we have to, you know, ship in everyone. So
desert. You know, your climate could not be further away from a desert.
Well, desert doesn't need to mean sand. It just means lack of rain. We're not Seattle, i.e. Rainland.
Rainland.
But anyway, GP Minneapolis Derf, are you going to be coming? Yay, nay.
Oh, you're putting him on the spot now.
I'm damn right.
On the spot.
Putting him on all the spot.
I'm coming. I'm going to be there.
You're going to be there?
All right, Mike. I guess I have to be there then.
Doing it. I'm trying to talk Ant into coming. If Dirt's coming, I need it to be the place because I'm working on some pretty old school boom boom artists. You know, soften them up a little bit. Talking to the tournament organizer to say, we're trying to get some people that probably nobody's seen in about 15 years.
We're going clubbing, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's not even a question. In the desert. We're going in the desert.
We're going in the desert, and Durf is going to dress like Tony Montana. It's going to be fantastic.
No, we're dressing like the three javelineers.
With the hat!
Octopus hats.
All right, Durf, I'm going to hold you to that. You need a place to stay? I got you, fam. I'll get you a bed. You can hang
totally
on wiener dogs.
I'm gonna now look for octopus hats.
I'm sure it exists.
That's my new mission. I'll ask MJ. MJ
would always know. Well, I mean, that's all we got. We want to keep it short as we possibly can, but want to, you know, thank Gathering Magic for letting us host there. Cool Stuff Inc. is a great spot to look for everything from singles to, you know, board games, which you should be buying board games there for everyone. It is by far the best place to buy them online, period, not close. You can find us at Snack Time. You can put us on YouTube, on iTunes, find us really easily. We post periodically pictures of dogs/snacks on our things. On Twitter, I'm at Vorthos Mike. We got Ant at Ant Tessitore. Derf, how can they find you on them Twitters?
So I am Derfington on Twitter. You can check out Dirtling Around every other Friday at mandeprived.com. And I also have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/dirtlingaround, where I also post my comics a bit later in the day on Friday. And during the week, I also post, you know, random sketches as well, which people seem to like. So check those out.
We totally will. So for the rest of the people that are watching, thanks for stopping by.